That's what I found in intermittent fasting myself. It helps you, you know. It's like, it really also like makes you all in. I think we talked about this earlier too, you know, with kitchens and things like that. I think whenever an individual can get all in, man, yeah, you're in a really good spot, and you're going to essentially find success.
Welcome to the Private Chef Podcast, serving the 1%. I'm your host, Hannes Hentje. And on our show, we speak to the best chefs, how they honed in on their skills to excel in the industry, and what it takes to work as a private chef for some of the most exclusive clients in the world. Welcome back to the Chef Series. Today, we have Chef Jesse. And, you know, he's really grown into a different aspect of the industry, working for sport athletes, which I think is super interesting. And we've already had some chefs from the UK, you know, working for Manchester United. So this is a different take on this, because now we're back in the US, pro athletes. So welcome to the show, Chef.
Thank you so much for having me. I appreciate your time, and, you know, finding me. So thanks.
Yeah, likewise. So how did you manage to, you know, not only become a chef, but eventually work for some of the best athletes in the country?
Sure, thank you. So my kind of journey into cooking, we can kind of start there and kind of show the evolution, if you don't mind. So I was kind of just like listless and maybe lost a little bit in life, kind of not really knowing my direction. I kind of dropped out of college and just really didn't have any direction. I actually was in real estate a little bit, in like a rental capacity, but it was really kind of like going nowhere. And I really didn't have that drive to kind of meet sales. And it just really wasn't my, you know, bag of tricks. So I found my way to the restaurants. I had always had a passion, kind of cooked at home. So I had pretty humble beginnings. I did not go to culinary school. So I started just on the line at P.F. Chang's. So P.F. Chang's gave me my start. You know, kind of just worked up. I'm from Chicago originally. I currently live in the greater Detroit area now. But I'm from Chicago, born and raised. And so I worked my way through different restaurant groups there, Boca restaurant group and Wolfgang Puck Catering. Those are kind of like the two places really where I like really cut my teeth and learned quite a bit. That eventually, I guess, just kind of like, I think we all can share in these experiences of low pay, high labor hours of every week. It's kind of the price we have to pay, at least, you know, to kind of get the knowledge that we really need to kind of distance ourselves, whether it's to open our own restaurant or, you know, do something like I am doing, private chefing, having that knowledge to like really pull from lots of different cuisines and, you know, really take it to in whatever direction your clients need it. So I kind of, those places really gave me, that opportunity to grow. But I found myself just kind of needing that, you know, kind of more money, more opportunity, more ability and freedom to grow. And that's what led me to a really phenomenal company in Chicago called Kitch Fix. And they're an online meal delivery service there. It's a small startup company. And they basically, you know, they're a modified paleo kind of diet. You know, this was like 2015, we're talking. When I joined their team. And that's kind of like really when that big paleo movement, I felt we were in the thick of it, you know, people were dropping the grains and gluten and really switching towards a more, I guess nuts would be saturated fats, if I'm not mistaken, like more nuts and, you know, fruits, berries, hunter-gatherer kind of thing. So what was really cool about that company, and that's really where I kind of like leaned into this identity of just like really good, honest cooking, you know, that company built like chef forward meals, but we're with the intention of like being healthy. You know, we cooked exclusively with coconut oil, sourced all of our produce organically. That's another thing, you know, for restaurants to take on that extra cost of, you know, sourcing things organically. It was really that, I guess that was like the final molding of like me into a chef before I like really kind of went out into the world. So that was like pretty, you know, concise. That's about a 10-year gap, maybe about an 8-year experience, you know, segment of my life from P.F. Chang's to that moment. So I guess, you know, with that company, we also had this opportunity to cook for the Chicago Cubs in 2016 when they won the World Series. So that really truly opened the door for specifically sports nutrition and my ability to work with athletes, you know, on a personal level. And the story behind that is pretty cool. Superior chef, my executive chef. I worked my way up from like kind of a protein cook for, because we are like doing like, you know, maybe 1400 meals or something like that a day as far as service went. So I started off as like cooking all the proteins for that. And then I worked my way up to becoming the executive sous chef. And I ran the commissary kitchen that we had and kind of supplemented the kitchen we had at Wrigley. And in this opportunity, you know, I had a friend who just essentially gave me this opportunity. You know, he couldn't do it given the kind of food on his plate, so to speak. Yeah. So I had this phenomenal opportunity to cook for Nikola Mirotic, a former Chicago Bulls basketball player. And that job inevitably led me, I followed him through two trades. He got traded to the New Orleans Pelicans. We lived there for about 6 months. And then he got traded to the Milwaukee Bucks. And, you know, they got five games away from, you know, winning the championship that year. It was 2 years removed from winning the championship with the Cubs. Like, it was so surreal at the time. And I think lots of times in that time of my life, I really forced it. You know, I kind of backed my way into this goal of like, all right, cool, I'm going to win a championship in all three major sports. It's like so silly because, like, you know, it had never been a goal. I was just so lucky enough to be in the right time, right spot. Yeah. So that was kind of foolish. But we are so foolish sometimes in our youth and in our ambition. And sometimes we grow out of that and kind of grow with it too at times, I guess.
Yeah. What was that like for you to, you know, I'm sure, was it like obvious for you that you would follow him with the traits, or did you have to think about that?
Yeah. So for me, as far as I was concerned, there would be nothing to stop me. You know, I think for the first time in my career, it was like the kind of the spotlight was focused on me to a certain degree. I mean, at the end of the day, he was the professional athlete and kind of in the home, you always need to like take a backseat to that. But it was the first time I felt like kind of a rock star, you know, felt like really cool. It felt like wanted also, especially not
a sense
going
of appreciation, you know, that somebody,
oh, absolutely.
Somebody asked him like, hey, you are important to my success. I want you to come with me. Like you're a part of my team. I'm going to play for another team, but you're on my team and I want you to come.
That's correct. Yeah. And in fact, at the time, it was like kind of a tandem role. There was a chef that was already cooking for him. And I was kind of just like filling in these days in which she couldn't like kind of honor her, you know, responsibilities there because she was trying to like grow her own private chefing business. So she had kind of different things going on, kind of like spanning the entire city. So it was difficult to, you know, kind of keep that. So kind of softly in that, I mean, I essentially like beat someone else out for this opportunity. You know, at the time she had a child, so maybe they offered her you know, the possibility to leave, but in all honesty, my heart of hearts, I believed it to be, you know, the only one who was asked to go, you know, so that was really cool. In fact, he notoriously told me one time, you know, cause I am like, maybe I'm kind of like a menacing person. I'm like a bigger guy, kind of bald, you know, person and just kind of bigger. But I'm like a teddy bear, you know, like when I put myself out there, I really, it's coming from the softest, nicest, most wholesome place.
I thought you'd get taking this, I thought you're going to say, he also asked me because I'm a bigger guy, like I'm almost a security guy.
No.
And you're taking it the completely opposite direction.
Yeah. No, he told me, he gave me quite a bit of confidence in telling me that, you know, it's no it's no surprise that they asked me to go. Like, I didn't get it because I'm a nice guy. I get it because I'm the best, like, that they had kind of put in front of them, you know? So that was always, like, really endearing and, like, really helped me through some tough times, you know? Two trades. I mean, we picked up my wife, that is, and I, we picked up our life kind of twice, you know, for them and for this, you know, so kind of even going back to, my mental state, you know, even being presented with this opportunity, you know, and, you know, I'm incredibly grateful for her, incredibly grateful for them, you know, we no longer work with each other. After that year in Milwaukee, they decided to move to Spain and I essentially just tapped out, you know, I couldn't do it anymore. It was a little bit too much, you know, but a phenomenal experience nonetheless.
I used to live in Spain. Yeah. It's great quality of life. Should have gone. Obviously it's a bit of a stretch. Yeah,
sure. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I couldn't, I guess we collectively as a family, we couldn't really wrap our heads around it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, at that point, yeah, it's completely different, you know, different culture, you know, different language. It's like overall a slightly different system. It's really picking up the life. So where did you go from there?
Yeah. So I kind of like all throughout this entire experience with the basketball player, I was kind of working in conjunction with a gut health expert out of Royal Oak, Michigan. And, she kind of led me into another opportunity here in Michigan. It's been maybe three years now since I've worked with like directly with professional athletes. So now I'm just kind of like working with, you know, people who have the means to essentially afford a private chef in their home. So, and that's not come without its struggles. You know what I mean? It can be difficult at times, to work for people with just, you know, that level of wealth, that level of, you know, I guess, access. So that first relationship.
Sure. Yeah. Who would you say is more challenging to work for, an athlete that's optimizing for peak performance or, maybe an ultra high net worth individual that, you know, just has a general, very high standard and is used to getting their way? I mean, there could also be both, I guess.
Sure. Yeah. I think it's, 100%. I'd probably lean more towards that. I think it's hard to paint with a broad brush on a myriad of subjects, you know, this one included. So they both presented their difficulties. I guess in both situations, I felt that like the mental health of my clients themselves were inevitably the reasons why I left, you know. I think another side goal of becoming a private chef and leaving restaurants, it is a giant focus on mental health, just balance and quality of life. I mean, these things are the most important thing to me. And that's kind of shown growth and change in me. So like, let's say if I were presented another opportunity to leave tomorrow, it'd probably be something I just pass up on for now. And then just like find the next thing, you know? So that I can think that comes a little bit with age and confidence and, you know, that kind of thing.
So would you ever consider going back to a restaurant, or do you feel like a private chef, that's it in terms of the chef world?
Yeah. I think the next play is what I'd really love to do is just kind of scale something, a sauce, a dish, you know, a brand, a SKU of food. I mean, that's during COVID. That's actually what I have a little bit of experience in too. I spent a year and a half in like commercial food manufacturing, working with a technology called HPP, high pressure pasteurization. So, are you familiar with it?
I mean, I think I have an understanding of what it is. Yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty cool, man. I mean, so before I got the job, I had no clue even what it is. And this kind of like follows the theme really of my life, is that I just kind of like rise to the occasion. So I had an opportunity to just like create a vegan tamale ball kind of thing. Like that was the concept of the like owner. And I just was pulling the strings trying to get this into development. And their executive chef, so I was like just a consultant, and their executive chef left, a couple other people left. And it gave me this opportunity to like walk into this like production manager role of like actually like in a refrigerated room, you know, managing like 35 people, the processing and final packing of like some private label, like local grocery store chicken. So it was just like such an education. So I feel like, and it was kind of like chaotically run. I mean, that's why you can have like someone with zero credentials, zero experience like myself, you know, running like a $7 million machine and fixing it. Like that's kind of like not a great situation to be in, you know?
Yeah.
But chaos and it's just like so comfortable to me. So I just kind of like,
I will say something.
Thrive.
You're saying you don't have credentials, yeah. But one thing that qualifies you over many other people is that you're leaning into it. You're an action taker. And, you know, the more I'm 100%. Hearing from your story is you don't shy away. I mean, you know, you're definitely going with the flow and leaning into it, but you're an action taker. And, you know, I think that the level of excellence that you have in order to work for the kind of clients you have now, you know, I think you shouldn't discount yourself just because you don't have a culinary degree or something like that.
Oh yeah, of course. And I guess more so manufacturing, like supply chain. I mean, that's really the realm in which I felt like I was unqualified for, like, you know, writing a proper bill of lading and like, you know, ordering a freight truck, things like this that I just had no clue about.
I would also have to figure out where to start when I'm ordering a freight truck.
Yeah, 100%. So like I was really lucky to have a really great, like my superior, like the guy was like the director of operations. He's a very good friend of mine to this day. So, you know, I think all along my life, we have these people who like kind of pop into it and just like, you know, help us out. So I've been very lucky in that capacity.
Yeah. Yeah. So you mentioned the gut health doctor. Tell me a little bit more about that, because that's also personally super interesting to me. You know, I'm getting more and more into the gut microbiome and how that affects, you know, obviously everybody's health. But yeah, how did that work out for you?
So, you know, I think that my own like personal nutritional and like dietitian kind of like education can like be further advanced. So it was a lot of like her kind of like almost coming up with the structure, and then I was just like executing it. You know what I mean? Like talking about, so very simply, she developed like a plan, where there'd be like a weekly nut, for instance, like macadamia, cashew, almond, hemp seeds, pumpkin seeds as well. So like we'd make like that week all desserts, all like milks, anything, and however I could incorporate them kind of like that, that was really like the realm for me to be a chef and to like use those, you know? So she'd really be, it'd be like that kind of thing. She'd also do their blood work, and say, you know, they need more fermented foods, you know, they need more fiber, this and that. So it was really just, that's why I say I really worked with her, to like kind of get things in order. So I know that. And I also wasn't there for the beginning of it. I was kind of there for the end. So I know at least in the beginning, he had some what are those called? What is that? Like autoimmune kind of thing,
yeah,
like lots of inflammation and, yeah, you know, redness, yeah, in the face. So they really like started leaning into like fermented foods. That's when they started like getting sugar out of their diet, you know, pretty simple. Like that's about like, if you know anything about this style of cooking, that's at least what you know, to kind of like get the sugars out, get the processed foods out, no dairy, no soy. So these things I never cooked with for them. And not to mention, you know, like we talked about too, they are European as well to begin with. So their diet was inherently different from anything I grew up with. You know, I also didn't have like a very intimate relationship with even fresh vegetables and things like that, you know, growing up. So I don't have like this really wonderful memory of any one cooking like something so spectacular. They're kind of like very humble, modest things that I now even like to kind of dress up a little bit and make them chefy or whatever. But it is funny how even like I mentioned David Chang earlier when we were getting to know each other, but it's funny how we come back to this place and we don't even care how good it looks. I mean, really, it's like the taste that we're going for, you know. But I do realize I digressed a little bit. So, yeah.
I'm actually personally fascinated by what food can do for our health, physically, mentally, you know, and for many people, food is like a foreign object that kind of just passes through their system. But working with somebody who understands the gut microbiome, like the doctor you worked with, you know, you're basically understanding that you're taking an organism into you, who is also an organism, and then you have those like billions of organisms in your stomach or in your intestine and your colon, and you know, they're transforming the food into part of your organism, and it's like mind-boggling, the process behind it. And I think once we start looking at the human system as an organism of, you know, this earth, which this I don't want to get too foo-foo here, but, you know, it's basically a living organism feeding on lively food and incorporate that into our diet. Obviously, it just seems to make sense that that would be a better way to approach physical and mental health.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I couldn't agree more. I think things like sometimes there's like bad bacteria like candida or something like this. I think this is a bacteria that really loves and thrives on sugar, you know, yeast even as well. Like leaky gut too, as you were talking, I was kind of thinking some of these trigger words that like her and I would talk about. You also using things like bone broth. Bone broth is incredibly healing to like deal with like the inner lining, kind of, because from what I understand, like larger molecules can kind of just kind of tear away your like this mucosis like layer in your large intestine, and that's how like food, you know, sometimes that's what leaky gut is essentially. So you're getting like you know, just bad kind of, I don't know if it's bacteria necessarily or the food itself, but it's not permeating the blood barrier, you know, like effectively. So again, like I said, it's like kind of like when she would speak, it was like drinking water out of a fire hydrant, like good luck, you know, retaining a lot of it. But she was so good at just kind of like breaking it down to like what I could do, you know?
Yeah. So, you know, my dad got a little bit of a health issue a couple of months ago. So I flew home and I dialed him in fully on his diet. And in support, I was like, okay, if you don't eat sugar, I'm not going to eat sugar because I need to understand how challenging it is for you.
And 100%, yeah.
And I hadn't had sugar in multiple months now, and it's amazing.
Yeah,
it's unbelievable. First of all, when he and me went to the supermarket and we just walked around, I'm like, okay, 90% of the stuff we can't eat anymore right now because it's not supporting your treatment, and I'm supporting you, so we're not eating it. And you know, and so much of the stuff just has sugar because I get it. There's a whole psychology and economy behind why companies put sugar in everything, because people at the end of the day want it. It leads to additional sales. There's actually a podcast I like to refer to is Andrew Huberman from Stanford University,
Huberman Labs. Yeah,
I love him. And he keeps referring to that even if you numb the tongue and everything and you sit a human being or a rodent in front of sugar water, or it could be a monkey too, and they don't taste that it's sweet, 15 minutes later, they will figure out, not by taste, but by dopamine release in their system. There is an overall release that tells them this is the good stuff. And that's so interesting because there's so many triggers that we have no idea about that make us almost addicted to sugar. And the first month of me getting off sugar, I felt, I don't know, maybe like I'm an addict or something to something, because I had such energy fluctuations. I was in such a bad mood. It felt like addiction.
Withdrawals or something.
Withdrawal system, symptoms, yeah. Mm-hmm. So that was kind of mind blowing to have that experience, and now I feel like I have so much more steady and even energy.
Yeah. So like with with that, if I could throw a question towards you, with the removal of sugar, I mean, are you still eating? Are you not eating like flour or anything like that? How has your diet changed?
So I'm. I wound down a lot of flour today just because I was kind of craving it. I did treat myself for some pasta, which I haven't eaten in weeks. And I can feel such a difference. Like, you know, the heaviness is there that I didn't have in the last couple of weeks. And you have to go to zero and reintroduce it to notice the difference. Like it's nothing for that sure. I can understand feel like that. If I wouldn't have, and I've done some fasting in the past, and I feel like every time when I come back from fasting, I'm realizing something else about a certain food and how it's affecting me. And, you know, obviously this, most people don't tend to fast.
Yeah, having that baseline, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. But, for sure. That really helps. So, yeah, tell me a little bit more about what it means to eat maybe gluten or flour, and because I'm still on the edge with it. Being German, I love bread. I love good bread. I feel like flour is one of the last big cravings I have. Like, and occasionally, maybe, you know, just like freshly baked stuff. It's, I don't know, something about it.
So being an American, like the heart of it, right? Chicago and right in the middle of it, something so romantic about like the European lifestyle, like, and having like bread be a major component of it. So personally, I'm curious how much of this like war on gluten is like real and how much of it is like the tale of the times. You know, I do, but I'm certainly not combating like that celiac disease doesn't exist. I 100% agree with it. I think the quality of the flour you're starting with is one thing. And then if you are doing like a sourdough or something, I truly cannot speak to how that could possibly be bad for you. You know, it's like, I think it's like a prebiotic or something like that. Even like fermentation across the board, sauerkraut, kimchi, these things are kind of like semi being digested out in like the world. And then you're introducing it to your body, you know? So like with that level of thinking or how that was described to me by someone like who knows more about nutrition directly, I mean, to me, that just makes perfect sense, you know? So, while I didn't get like caught up in like the pandemic, you know, making bread towards the back end of it, I really did get into it. And I fell in love with it, the whole process of it, the length of it all, like the romance of it all, is really great. You know, I've never been a baker by any stretch of the imagination, and certainly sometimes the loaves didn't come out for me. But it was cool to kind of have this hobby to like chip away at and get better at, you know,
but there's also, to a point where the loaf, where the bread comes out, maybe it doesn't need to be perfect, but comes out close to what you envision as having a bread. Just the fact that you just baked it fresh, it makes it's so much more tasty than what you can buy, even if you almost fail on the execution.
Yeah. Oh, I couldn't agree more. I think all, you know, people who hunt or people who forage, it's like this connection really, like just like, I mean, it blows my mind, especially when I am making it. I'm like, man, like someone had like some flour and some water and like forgot about it. And then like, that's how we know about this. You know, that's so interesting to me, you know, like who was the first to figure this out? So it feels like so ancient and it makes me feel so connected. You know, maybe it's easy for me to get to that. I'm like a romantic person to begin with. But to me like that makes sense, you know? So I really like it. I try not to use it as much in my cooking. I do try to treat it like your pasta today, like a treat or something. But pizza, bread, of the like, pasta, like those are all things that are really near and dear to me. Like those are some of the foods that I grew up with that were like not Chicago fresh, but pizza. I have like really strong, really strong food memories, you know?
Yeah. I just spoke to a chef the other day. And he's literally, I mean, he's also going to Alinea, but he said, I'm flying to Chicago to eat pizza, but he's also having dinner at Alinea. So, but it was just very funny because he's like, yeah, that's how good it is.
It really is incredible. I used to work at a restaurant like six doors down from Alinea. We drink at the like local bar, like with some of the cooks. And they'd just be like going through certain, they'd be like, it's like a soldier or something, you know, they're headed to the end of the bar and be like, what's your life like? And I just remember one chef talking to me about like this, like pasta explosion. He just kept on talking about it. Like, cause he knew about it, but I was like kind of clueless because I had never been there, you know, still to this day. I mean, it's on the list, but it's not, you know, incredibly easy or affordable, right? Especially at that time, the salary I was making. But yeah, I mean, it's so cool. You know, it's so cool to, I admire those people who, you know, so like I took that chance to like move across state, you know, or, you know, across country really twice. So that was like my like big sacrifice. But, you know, people who work in Michelin restaurants and the sacrifices they make and the kind of growth that they all have individually. I mean, those kind of stories can be shared with everyone. I don't know many people who don't find those inspiring or like encouraging. You know what I mean?
There's many years ago, I was watching a documentary. It was in Germany about apprenticeship and they were complaining about the workload and also the environment that is in those fine dining kitchens in Germany. And one of the chefs, I think, actually had a really good argument, even though, you know, we could argue if it needs to be this way. But he was like, you know, the things we're putting on the plate cannot be produced in a normal 8-hour workday with average amount of passion. You know, he was like, you have to live this. And if you don't want to live this, that's fine. But please don't come work for me. Mm-hmm. So, and they were kind of going at,
yeah.
And when I first started in the kitchen, like my friends outside the culinary industry, they thought I'm insane because I would literally work twice the amount of hours in a week that they would. And I can't say there was something about that made us proud, and we loved it, and it was like a camaraderie, you know, just like you at the weekend, you go out for the beers with the group. But we couldn't have possibly done it. And at the end of the day, you can't pay two teams, you know, to produce that, because then the restaurant isn't economical. So the chef, in a sense, was right in the sense that he's like, okay, I cannot have two crews who each work 40 hours. So I have one crew that I pay 30% more, but I don't pay 200%, you know? So that's when the restaurant still is kind of economical. So, and obviously you can like go back and forth here, what makes sense. But I felt like he has a point. What we were doing in those restaurants, it takes above average. Just like an athlete doesn't go home, you know, after his first session of training. You know, I mean, the 1% of the 1% and the top athletes, they're obsessed. Like when you listen to Kobe Bryant or Michael Jordan speak about their work ethic, they're completely obsessed about making a point in the work ethic, in the diligence, and Kobe Bryant speaks about that a lot, how he was never into going out, or he was always very focused. He knew that he had to leave 100%, you know, in the training, in every game, if he wanted to look back at the career where he knew that he didn't leave anything on the field.
Yeah.
And I think there is a level of chefing where, or I think actually there is a level of in any industry where you have to approach it like that if you really want to take it to the next level. And that's like people that work at Alinea and places like that.
Oh, of course, yeah. And I think it's up to the individual. It's like you say, it's like the price you're willing to pay. You know, I think a certain level of like self-awareness comes with, you know, knowing what the price you're willing to pay is. I've certainly learned that in my career, you know, like, I would never want to take anything away from those chefs. But like very bluntly, I think I can do those things if I was willing to do that, you know, and I know that about myself, at least, that I'm not willing to like sacrifice that level, you know, like kind of like home life, like building a family. Those things have always been like far more important to me than like any kind of accolades that would come from cooking. You know, I think I just show up to cooking every day. Cooking is like my muse. I try to like really give myself to it in the capacity that I can, you know, and I've like learned to kind of be okay with that, you know?
Well, I think you just have that level of self-awareness, and you made it a priority to have a family, and I think that's perfectly fine. You know, like, mm-hmm. I think it just takes that level of self-awareness. Just like my sister was always very clear that she wants to have a family, and that's her priority, you know, and I think you're mm-hmm. you're nurturing that too. You know, now you're in a situation in your life where you want to have a family, and that's and I think that's very healthy. That's a good place to be in, where you know, where you know, and you have that level of self-awareness, and like, hey, those are my non-negotiables, and I want to take care of my family, and I did pay my dues by going cross country twice, you know, and kind of picking up life.
Sure.
But now you want to be settled, and I actually think that's a point.
Absolutely.
That's a point that I'm hearing in more of the conversations that I'm having with chefs, where there is the progression, you know, where we work our way up, and we get to a point where we feel a sense of appreciation. Our skill set is suddenly at a level where we can really move the needle for ourselves, and we can get those kind of clients that you had, and then that's one stage, and most of us then move into the stage where you are in, where it's like, okay, now let's rebalance this and become family oriented. But what I love is that private chefing allows for that. Like, obviously there's some travel jobs that don't allow for that, but I think the mm-hmm. industry overall still allows for having a family a lot more than working in a restaurant.
Yeah, I guess that leads us like to my current job that I have right now. It's a little younger family. I myself am 34. They're like in their early 40s. So like there's not that much of a gap between us. And they're just like so understanding. They also have a young child themselves. So like, we're like, this is the first situation where we're really truly like kind of growing together. We've explored and visited lots of different diets and things like that. So this is by far like the healthiest environment and has been the most encouraging to me to be like, okay, this is out here. This exists. Like, you know, I'll be able to find this again almost, you know? So like, this is like a very encouraging thing. If not be with them for an extended period of time, like it's all good. You know, it's a great relationship.
I want you to double down on this because what you just said is so crucial. It's these jobs exist. And I want everybody who listens to this, it's like, don't settle if it doesn't feel like what you're describing.
True. Yeah, I actually wanted to bring up too, I just recently, so part of this job, they awarded me like a stipend for furthering education. And I just recently joined an organization called the ACF, the American Culinary Federation.
Oh, that's great.
And we just had another
guy, Chef Chris from Long Island. He's also part of the same federation.
No way. That's phenomenal, man. Yeah. So I'm super new to them. I kind of like in the same week that we kind of purchased the convention tickets to Vegas and all of this, I kind of like learned about them. And then so the national convention was super helpful. But so many of these, you know, people who had been in the industry for, and it, this industry is so expansive. I mean, there's food programs in like giant corporate buildings, you know, schools, casinos, prisons. Like there was someone who spoke from a prison, Chef Jeff out of Las Vegas. I mean, it's incredible. And the thing is, like, everyone's got to eat. You know, I remember being like a young cook and like promising myself like job security, choosing this career, like everyone's got to eat kind of thing, you know. And it's kind of like this mindset of if you go to Harvard or you go to a local community college, it's like what you make of it. You know, and I think we've already touched on this, right? It's really like what you're going to put into it is what you're going to get out kind of. Yeah. So yeah, I mean, I guess I lost my train of thought there for a second.
Go ahead.
Yeah. So no, that they just, so many of these, chefs who had been in the careers, like in kitchens for 30 years, things like that, going to this national convention, I was so curious about how I'd be received as a private chef. Just like I told you, you know, you're leaving your peers behind. Sometimes there can be emotional responses of like, yeah, go get it. You know, you're like our hero. Then there's also like, you know, situations where maybe they're like less supported because they are not in a great mental state themselves, and they don't know how to like, you know, appreciate that and know that like only, you know, supporting each other is really only going to help us all grow. But I was so warmly received by everyone there, the level of interest in some of these chefs. When you reached out, I mean, I love the idea of like being able to share my story to really give these chefs this level of hope, you know? I mean, I know at times in my career I needed it, you know? And it's like you said, there was like kind of no way forward. You don't really know how to do it. And that makes it seem so pure. It also makes it kind of seem like you're on the cutting edge of something. So maybe that gives a little boost to the ego. I've also found that with kind of paleo cooking, it's all like you're making it up as you go kind of thing. You know, it's not like I'm doing French cuisine that's been done over and over again for, you know, 40 years that everyone knows, you know, and they all have their own individual expectations of what those things may be, you know. So I like kind of fudging it a little bit.
Which has a sense of beauty because it also means you have the freedom to explore.
Oh, absolutely. And you find yourself in some really unique places in that, you know, like I just recently did both an Alfredo sauce and a Caesar salad, like out of cauliflower, you know, like super low calorie and incredibly delicious, you know, but like no, like for the Caesar, for instance, no egg yolks, like very minimal fat. High cauliflower, you know, but still using like your mustard, your anchovies. I use tamari and fish sauce to kind of bring that umaminess to it, and black pepper, and like it's so well received, plus cheese as well. But Parmesan cheese, like not that like calorically dense, you know, if you're using it sparingly, you know. So trying to get creative with that in the food, I mean, that it's really genius. I mean, even like we talked about, like, what, you know, would you ever want a restaurant? Like that sauce is so good. Like, I'd really love to like learn in the coming years, like really know how to bring something like that to market, because that's where I find myself. And in one of your previous podcasts, just kind of having being limited with a W-2 salary, you know, I mean, these are the types of things that I'm thinking about. This is great and all, this is the best opportunity I've ever had, but like, there's got to be more. I'm like, I have too much like knowledge and ability to just kind of just do this. I really want like supplemental streams coming in. So that's like where my eyes are, you know, kind of for the future kind of thing.
I love this. I feel like at least a third of the chefs that I speak to, they have that. There's like, I know there's more. I know I can build something. Mm-hmm. And I actually think what you just said about that sauce, I mean, I think if it's done well, and you know, obviously you have to shelf stabilize it and get it to a point where it still maintains the consistency and everything. But there is a market for these things, and you know, give people the ability to eat better and healthier.
Yeah,
and it has to come in a convenient form like that. Because otherwise people won't do it. One of the things that I learned over maybe the last decade or so, trying to help people eat better, if it's not convenient, they won't do it.
Oh man, so true. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So where do you see yourself exploring? It sounds like you very much you want to combine the knowledge you have between, you know, working in a commissary kitchen and creating. Probably like products that you can actually sell, maybe even in a supermarket. Yeah. But you want to combine that with something that's super aligned with, you know, catering to health benefits and giving people a real tasty alternatives towards what's right now in the market in terms of maybe an Alfredo sauce that just, you know, makes you feel all sluggish. And while it might be super tasty, it also triples your risk of heart disease.
Yeah, how about that, huh? Yeah, I think that the most important thing to me, if and when I do bring something to like to the commercial space, I do want it to have like just the highest level of integrity. You know, as you mentioned, like getting the sauce to stick together, things like this. I mean, cauliflower is such. Just using this as an example, cauliflower is just such a like a water based thing. Like without having that fat to kind of emulsify it all together. You got to get into like some kind of like modifier and things like this. So it is curious. Those are kind of like some questions that are going to have to be answered, like when we like get into production of it all. But in that commercial space, I saw and worked with someone who built the Garden Fresh Salsa brand and sold that up, you know? So I kind of like that, again, just like we talked about, like this exists. You can't, I mean, this person created this salsa out of the back of their kitchen, and we're doing it in like, you know, 5 gallon, like paint bucket kind of things, you know? And they had to learn about, they learned the hard way about fermentation. And that's kind of like why they got into the high pressure pasteurization space, is because their, you know, products were literally bursting off the shelves, they said, because they were over fermenting and like just exploding in these plastic containers.
Literally, you know? Yeah, blowing up.
Yeah. So I do think.
It's a bit like, have you ever made kombucha at home?
Never kombucha, but my fair share of like, sauerkrauts, kimchis of the like. I mean, I fermented like every vegetable you could think of, but never kombucha. The SCOBY, I can't wrap my head around it, man. Honestly, I don't know. It kind of scares me a little bit. Not the SCOBY itself, but the process, you know, I mean, to like produce.
Yeah. Yeah. If you don't watch it, it might blow up in the kitchen.
Yeah, totally. Sound like you have some experience, you know? Yeah.
It gets messy. I can tell you that much.
I bet, man. Yeah, a really phenomenal kombucha company out of New Orleans. It's called the Big Easy Kombucha. We fell in love with them there. They're really great. They had an awesome like little setup there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, so yeah, this is super interesting. I mean, I'm a bit of a nut when it comes to the functionality of food, and I just love, I mean, I think now I'm getting to a point where I personally care more about what it does for my system than the flavor, because I'm so excited about, I mean, especially following people like Andrew Huberman and Peter Thier and people that, you know, really take it from a scientific approach and look into, and then you can also tell the difference how you feel when you eat it. And, you know, this energizes me, this doesn't energize me, you know, this leaves me sluggish the next day, or this gives me a bad night of sleep. And just slowly tuning into that, I think it's very, very interesting. And that's an aspect that I love now more than ever of being a private chef, is to go on that journey and explore that with my clients.
Yeah. That's so cool. And it's so like intimate, like how many other people get to do that. It's like we're halfway in between like being in service and in like healthcare, you know. It's such a unique mixture of the two, really.
Yeah. I like the way you put it. Yeah. It's true. I mean, there's, and obviously it's like the ultimate luxury service to have a team between a chef and a nutritionist, you know, and you like, obviously that's quite a ticket every year to spend on your health, but it's, I think not only does it serve someone, it's also very exciting for the team to have that level of involvement and really see the results.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can speak to results, because, you know, in our kitchen, like it's like you said earlier about, you know, it doesn't take 8 hours to do this. It takes 13. It costs $65 because it took 13 hours to do that. And I had to pay, you know, at least three people, whatever I paid them, to just watch that along the way. The commis chef, like, cut the vegetables, you know, this person made the sauce or the stock. And then like this one, like, watched it, or, you know what I mean? So many hands touched it. But I was introduced to this level of gratification in the kitchen. Here's the food. And then this person saying it's delicious or it's not. And then you learn and you grow. So I couldn't help but like see that in your face, that probably like pulls on that string of you and your journey as a chef, to get that gratification of the food making you feel good, and the tinkering of it. I mean, how different is that than like creating a recipe, really, you know? And it's like this recipe for your body. How do I make my body function at the highest level, you know? And that's really interesting.
Yeah, it was especially rewarding when I did it for my dad. Dude. Mm-hmm. When it's, you know, because that's it's so close to home, and then I'm like, you know, within 6 weeks after years, I was never dialed into his diet because it's just, you know, dads, they have that thing. But once he got the news from the doctor that he has to make a change, I'm like, this is what we're going to do. I've been doing this for years for my clients. They pay me a lot of money to do this. We're dialing in 100%. He went, I'm very proud of him because I see other uncles and people in my surroundings who didn't change anything when the doctors told them it's time. My dad went 180 degrees, completely changed his diet. Within 6 weeks, we were able to get him off the blood pressure meds that he had for years.
Right.
You know, the body weight started to normalize, the skin. He actually looks younger now, still not being... He looks younger now than five years ago.
I believe it. Yeah.
Just because we went like completely in on the food and gave him real food, you know? It's basically just real food. Mm-hmm. It's whole plant-based vegetables, a lot of it, you know? And it's just like down from the farm. It doesn't come from far. It's like 2 miles down the street. We got a farm that has a nice, diverse, organic offering. And that was it, you know. There's no rocket science behind it. I did dial him in a little bit on intermittent fasting, so he has like a window where he eats.
That's great.
Which
too.
To many people sounds horrific, but it really allowed his body to recover. And he said he hasn't slept that well in years. And there's so many benefits to doing it. And he's been on a diet for a couple of months now, and I think he sees the benefits, and that's the most rewarding part of it, is because I think now he's at a point where he wants to stick to it, because it's not it doesn't feel like he actually feels the benefit, and that's the most rewarding part. Once you cross kind of the valley and people stop feeling like they're missing something, like, oh, I want my sugar, or I want this, and once they get through the valley, I'm like, wow, I can feel this good.
100%. I guess two things. One, I mean, I'm sure it feels good. I mean, like, what son doesn't want to crush it for their dad? You know what I mean? So, like, that's got to just feel phenomenal to be a son of a father and, like, help your dad out. Like, that's great. And it's like this cycle of life, so to speak. They took care of you when you were a child, and now you're taking care of him. So that's phenomenal, man. Congratulations. And then the second thing, you know, yeah, absolutely. I guess the fasting... it's kind of whenever we change a lifestyle or anything like that, you know, there's tons of drug abuse and alcohol abuse in our industry itself. So it's kind of helpful to let and kind of like you become who you surround yourself around. So my point is, I guess the intermittent fasting kind of keeps an individual focused on, hey, I've worked so hard for, you know, 16, 18, 14 hours. I'm not going to like fuck it off right now. You know, I really am going to stick to my diet. So it's so cool to be, that's what I found in intermittent fasting myself. It helps you, you know. It's like, it really also like makes you all in. I think we talked about this earlier too, you know, with kitchens and things like that. I think whenever an individual can get all in, man, you're in a really good spot, and you're going to essentially find success. It's like a rule of averages, man. You know?
Yeah. I mean, yeah, there's just, whenever you're all in, stuff keeps happening. Yeah. That's just the way it is. Yeah. You know, once you're leaning in and you kind of burn the boat, and things will happen, and sometimes for the better, sometimes for the worse, maybe. But
hey, but you live and grow. You know what I mean? Like, what don't kill you make you stronger kind of thing. So, yeah, I totally agree with that.
Yeah, 100%. Well, Chef Jesse, this was an awesome conversation.
Absolutely.
You know, I loved your story and you sharing your experience. Thank you so much for your time.
Absolutely, you know? Brother. I'd love to do it whenever, you know, keep my information in the future. We can share recipes and just essentially, you know, help each other through, you know, practice what we preach kind of deal, you know? So, yeah, brother, I appreciate everything you're doing.
Yeah, 100%.
I hope this, you know, gets some traction, and it really does help some of our peers kind of find the way into this field. And, you know, thank you for doing what you're doing. I appreciate you.
Thank you for joining us at the Private Chef Podcast. If you know any highly skilled chefs that want to take their life to the next level, make sure to share this podcast with them. And if you enjoyed this episode, click subscribe and check out our upcoming episodes. Thank you for listening.